Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the program. This is Trucking with Authority, and I'm your host, Kenny Long. The show tonight is all about the ins and outs of becoming a motor carrier, from getting set up with the FMCSA, to dealing with the record-keeping requirements, to insurance regulations, your accounting situations that you come across along the way, factoring, dealing with brokers, working with load boards, dispatching trucks, growing a fleet, bringing on company drivers, bringing on owner-operators, and anything else in between. We've talked a lot in the past about marketing and sales, and a lot of people put a lot of effort and money and time into the marketing aspect of their business. It's something that even if you don't put a lot of money into it, you want to make sure that you don't go backwards and actually hurt yourself. So tonight's show is all about first impressions. You only get one first impression, and that is at the most basic form, marketing. So if you've done the hard work, you've built a brand, you've got logos, you've got uniforms, you've got everything that you should have done along the way to build this brand. What happens at that first impression when your customers first see your driver walk up to the dock, when they first see that truck pull in, or when they first hear that voice on the other side of the phone? So press 1 and share your comments and your stories. I know with this topic there's a lot of them. But it's not just about sharing the stories tonight. Of course, we want to hear them. Everybody knows all of the horror stories that are out there. You see them every day on Facebook with the trucks wrecked and drivers in a shambles walking across parking lots, and all of that's part of it. And, of course, we're welcome to share those stories as well. But what we're looking for tonight are answers, solutions to the problem. We can't fix the entire industry, but we can fix our own businesses. And what can we do to mitigate those problems before they start? So again, go ahead and press 1. Add your questions or comments. We'll get you on the air. I will put out a little bit of a disclaimer. There is a thunderstorm passing over me right now tonight. The lights have been fading in and out. So if for some reason I lose power or lose phone connection or lose internet service or whatever it takes here, bear with us. I will try to get it all reconnected as soon as possible. But the storms right now are across the country, so I hope you all are playing it safe and doing the right thing and trying to stay out of the weather when you can and be prepared for it. So I'm rolling down the board right now. It looks like we have plenty of callers on. We already have some questions lined up. I had a question from Facebook that I'm going to go ahead and jump on first. I won't get too deep into it. I'm just going to touch on this one. But it's all about per diem. And per diem is very complicated, and it really comes down to individual situations and a tax situation. Per diem is really an IRS gift, if you will, and it can work for you or against you. As a driver, most of us tend to understand how it works from our end on the driver side. But how does it work from the company side? That was the question. What do you do as a company now if you're hiring drivers to pay per diem, and how does it benefit you from that angle? It's very complicated. As I mentioned, it is an IRS issue, which everything IRS related is complicated. But I'll break it down at the very most simple form. And I'm not an accountant. I will recommend that if you fit into some of these general categories, that you go speak to an accountant to see if they can save you any money. Now, as for paying per diem, now, if you are an owner-operator, leased to a carrier, you work for yourself, but you're away from home. Of course, for any night that you're away from home, you can claim per diem. And you get $59 per day. On your tax return, you get to write off 80% of that. But you total up the entire $59 per day throughout the year. Now, that part's pretty easy. I know a lot of people already get lost there because of the 80% and so forth. But that's what most people tend to understand. Where it gets more complicated is on the tax return itself. If you're a sole proprietor, you fill out your 1040 and your Schedule C. This is the easiest way to claim per diem because it's a business expense on your Schedule C. Now, it becomes more complicated if you incorporate or an LLC because now you're not filling out a Schedule C anymore. Now the question is, where do you file that return? Where do you put that per diem amount? Technically, accountants will go back and forth about this, but technically, the IRS says that if you are incorporated, you cannot claim per diem. But everybody does it. So that's where it gets tricky. Now, it's a business expense. So now if you incorporate and you're claiming per diem on your business, do you claim it on your corporate tax return or on your individual tax return? But now you're not filing a Schedule C. So your business expense can't go on a Schedule C. If you itemize, you can still use per diem that way. But you can still claim it on your corporate return. So this is where the accountant has to run it both ways and look at this and see how it benefits you most. If you run it on your corporate return, your corporation has to pay you as a driver that per diem and then later write it off. Now, mind you, as an S corp, all the income is passed through taxation. So writing it off on the corporate side, you're still writing it off on your own taxes because the corporate income is your own. It's an S corp, so it passes through. Now, if that's not complicated enough, that's how you would file it for yourself, basically. Again, check with your accountant on that. But what happens when you have drivers other than yourself? This is where the question was. Now, the big major fleets offer these per diem programs. And just to use easy round numbers, let's say they pay 50 cents per mile without a per diem. And they may have some type of a deal where they'll pay you 10 cents per mile per diem and only 40 cents per mile for your actual revenues. Now, where that gets complicated for the driver is, it makes it appear as your taxable income is lower. And a lot of drivers don't like that because if they want to buy a car or they want to finance a house, the banks look at that number because per diem is seen as a reimbursable expense. So if you buy food or you buy a hotel, any of that, the per diem covers that. So per diem is reimbursing you for monies that you spent. So it's not looked at as income. But it is income, and that's where it's difficult. So on the driver's side, you have to weigh back and forth. If you have a choice, go back and forth and see if it makes sense to save the money on the taxes because you don't pay tax on that extra 10 cents. You only pay tax on the 40 cents. So you'd have to run it both ways and see which way benefits you most. Now, from the company side, now, some of these fleets have thousands of drivers. And saving a few cents, now, mind you, the company still has to pay these drivers that money. So the company still has to pay out that extra 10 cents per mile. You're still putting out 50 cents per mile. You're not saving anything there. Where the savings is now the company no longer has to pay that 7.5% employment tax on that 10 cents per mile. So let's do the math on this. If you have a handful of drivers, and typically I used round numbers and it worked out to 10 cents, but typically it's only a few cents per mile, maybe 6-8 cents a mile. Mind you, it works out to be whatever, $59 per day. So you may save $59 per day per driver that you don't have to pay tax on if you go this route. To me, that little bit of savings doesn't add up to be worthwhile if you only have a few drivers. The big fleets do it because they have bean counters there that are trying to pinch every penny they can. And if you take thousands of drivers and you save that $50 a day, $59 a day, and you don't pay tax on that portion, you have a significant savings just in tax. All of those drivers still have to pay tax on their portions of the revenues, but they don't have to pay on the per diem amounts. So again, there's no definitive answer here. I'm trying to lay out the basics of how per diem works. If you only have a few drivers, it's not likely going to be worthwhile to try to pay them any type of a per diem amount. Some of the big fleets do charge a penny or two per mile just as a processing fee. And in some cases, they make more money off of that processing fee than they save doing it. And that's where their savings come. Now, if you think you can make more money at 1 or 2 cents per mile off of a handful of drivers that you may have in your small fleet, well, I don't know how you're paying your drivers, but that seems unlikely to me. So in most cases, a small fleet won't see a significant enough savings to make it worthwhile to try to pay per diem. But if you're in a situation where for some reason you will, then you need to run that by your accountant and have him run the numbers both ways and ask him his opinion or her opinion on how to best do that. So I just wanted to touch on that per diem and try to at least give people a highlight of how that would work from the company side. Because remember, this expense is still a business expense. Now, mind you, the drivers, if they don't own the company, that is still a business expense for them. And a driver that, and this may be something that is a deciding factor for you if you want to decide if you want to help your drivers or not. If your drivers are in a tax bracket where they can save money by not paying that extra on the per diem, it might help your drivers that way. But again, if your drivers are trying to finance houses and cars and trying to grow a family, maybe it's better that they do pay the tax on the money, but it shows there's a revenue for them. And it comes down to, we're really pinching pennies here when we try to start talking about saving money on per diem. So this is really a tough one. The company driver that doesn't own the company still has to file it as an itemized deduction, so they can still take it. But if they're in an income bracket where their standard deduction is actually higher than itemized anyway, they're not saving any money off of per diem. So just something to think about. And we'll get back to images and appearance here shortly. I have one other phone call we'll jump to quick. Before we get back to that. And again, go ahead and press 1 if you have any questions, comments, or you'd like to add anything else. And we'll jump to Alex in Florida. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kenny, how are you?
Great, how can I help you?
Yeah, Kenny, my question is on the tax stuff. As you know, I can never understand the IRS rules, stuff like that. Because as far as I was concerned of my company, when I was doing the other stuff, the other type of work that I was doing before I got my own authority, I was a LLC, and I was told by my accountant that an LLC would only pay a certain amount of tax a year, this besides how much money they make after that. So, in instance, if my company would made $84,000 of revenue, I was only paid $1,000, 15.3% of $84,000. But if I go beyond $84,000, I was still going to pay 15.3 or even less. So now I got my own employee and I got my own customers, right? And I actually signed up with this company where there's enough loads for 2,000 miles and over. And I have the opportunity to do team driving because the guy who's giving me the loads is like, well, I mean, you know, you can do two or three of these loads because we got all these loads all over. You know, I got like four, six, seven loads like that a week. And, you know, you can do team driving. And, you know, and I was thinking of bringing my brother along with me. But, of course, if he's going to go with me on my own authority as a team, he wants, you know, he's going to have a – he wants to have a
– Hey, Alex, let me pause you for a second. Are you on a speakerphone or is there an echo in the room behind you?
I think there's an echo in the room. Let me just move out of here because there's a lot of echo.
Oh, that,
can you hear me now?
That's a lot better right there, whatever you just did. Okay, go ahead.
So, look, so, you know, the guy, the, my direct shipper, you know, the warehouse, the distribution center, tell me that they have enough loads week that are over 2,000 miles or more because it's an LLT load. You know, you do multiple drops, do at least six drops, and it's over in the, you know, the total miles is over 2,000 or 1,800 miles a week, and it pays pretty good. And he told me, you know, you can do three or four days a week if you were doing team driving. Now, if I bring my brother along, you know, he's going to want a piece of this, you know, but at the same time, a team will regenerate more revenue than a single person would do because, I mean, you know, a load over 2,000 miles, I can only do two of those a week, if so,
right.
Trying to run legal and stuff like that. But in this instance, the guy's like, I will accommodate it, you know, the delivery dates and all that. It's just, you know, a matter of letting me know and sign on as a team. Now, I got an LLC, but as a business, you know, this partnership, how much tax am I looking to pay? Well, it's worth my while to stay as an LLC. And, I know as an owner operator, I know I was grossing over $196,000 a year at the company doing intermodal work. I mean, I know that with my own authority, I can break those numbers easily by at least $30,000 more a year. See what I'm saying? So,
right, okay.
In an LLC, I will only pay 50% once of $84,000 revenue. But once I go over it, those $84,000, as far as I know, I will not pay more tax. Or if I pay, I only pay 2% more. Other than that, I'm paying no more tax than that because, mind you, I got oil changes, fixes, and maintenance, and all of that stuff.
Right.
So.
Okay, so I guess, let me summarize your question here. You want to know if you want to stay as an LLC or what was the other option?
Was a partnership.
Or just a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're already set up as an LLC, and you'll run it by your accountant, of course, but typically an LLC will save a lot more than a partnership will. And are you taxed as an S-Corp?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're taxed as an S-Corp with an LLC, you'll more than likely save more as an LLC, and you're already set up that way, so more than likely you'll be better off staying that way. And you can either have your partner bring on, you know, as a part of the company, he can have some of the shares of your LLC. An LLC is structured somewhat like a corporation as far as the distributions of the money go the same way as an S-Corp, okay? You're taxed that way. Now, if you bring them on as a partnership, you're taxed as a sole proprietor for both sides. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If there's all the LLC and just form a partnership with him, you both pay 100% of the tax on whatever portion belongs to you. See what I mean? LLC, just like it works for yourself, if you bring him on as well, whatever his ratio of tax is, depending on his investment in the company, is the amount of tax that he has to pay. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll still... As being taxed as an S-Corp, you still file payroll. So you'll still take a payroll, and to use easy numbers, let's say you make $50,000 and he makes $50,000, okay? So you each pay your portion of tax on the $50,000. And let's say you're 50-50 in the LLC at this point. And above the payroll amount, there's another $50,000. So let's just say that the net profit for this, or the net... revenues after fuel expenses and so forth is 150, $50,000 for payroll for you, $50,000 for payroll for him. There's another $50,000 left still in the company. Okay? What you'll do at that point is $25,000 will be your responsibility to pay tax on, and $25,000 will be his responsibility to pay tax on. You follow me?
So at the end of the year, not only did we make $50,000 on the escrow, on the payroll, but after we paid the $25,000 on the $150,000, so we both keep $125,000 because it's company profit after taxes are paid. That's basically what it is, right?
Basically, yes. It's no different than the way it is set up for you now. Only now, everything is going to be divided by two. Or, you know, whatever the ratio is, because, you know, if he just wants to buy 25% in or whatever, you guys work that out. But, you know, the responsibility will be divided equally depending on that ratio of ownership in the company. And you'll still have the same savings as an LLC as you do now, but now you're sharing that savings with your partner as well. Okay?
Okay. And how about if I just keep myself as the sole owner of the company as an LLC, and I just bring him as a driver for me to do team, but I pay him, but we come to like a, you know, gentleman's agreement because he's my brother. I'll be like, look, listen, the company's going to stay under my name, but we're family, we're brothers, and you and I, we're going to put the same amount of effort, the same amount of money and work. So at the end of the year, we'll just split the difference. You see what I'm saying? And would that have any differences? And also, I mean, you think it's worth my while to lease a new truck and trailer, because I run down the numbers and it comes out to like 50 cents a mile. So, you know, for just the truck and the trailer, and another 30 cents a mile for the fuel because it's a brand new truck. The, you know, very aerodynamically, it's going to give like almost 8 miles to the gallon. And just to use it as a tax deduction, because I mean I would not have the maintenance that I would have on my current truck,
okay,
you know, that I have to do oil changes and all that, because I can deduct, that's all tax deduction, right? It's a tax write-off because it's leased on.
Yes, but don't do it. Hold on. Okay, we got two questions here. Okay, let me go back to the LLC part. If you pay him, if you don't make him a part of the LLC and you just pay him a salary, whatever that may be, he's responsible to pay tax on 100% of everything that you give him, the employment tax and everything. And you'll be responsible to pay his share of the employment tax, okay, if you don't make him a shareholder in the LLC, okay? So at the end of the year, to use the numbers I was using before, at the end of the year, you've made $50,000, he's made $50,000 payroll, done, right? December 31st, you take a draw of, you know, $25,000, that's your portion, that's your retained earnings, and you want to just give him a check of $25,000. Well, because he's not a part of the LLC, you have to pay tax on that $25,000, the employment tax. You see what I mean? That'll be your responsibility to pay that. So that's where bringing him on is a benefit, but I understand the complications of working with family. Believe me, I do. So that, like you said, a gentleman's agreement is what it's going to come down to. Now, maybe it's best if you you'll have to look, because if those retained earnings are a significant amount, you know, if you take $50,000, he takes $50,000, and at the end of the year there's $250,000 left in there, you're going to get stuck with a big tax bill all on you, you know. So I think you need to run this by an accountant, show him the numbers, and see what works best for you. But staying as an LLC and bringing him on, if that's what you want to do, is making him a part of it, is probably the way to go.
Yeah, I know. I see what you're saying. Yeah, because if I get $50,000 on the payroll and he gets $50,000, but then at the end of the year you got $200,000 left on the company net, so I'm stuck with 15.3% of that on the tax on that money, and then I have to come up with this each year of the pie. Okay.
Exactly.
So I actually end up paying more tax as if I'm doing it 50-50 on an LLC. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yes, and it would all be on you, and your brother, he's actually saving. You know, and of course, you could work it out with him to pay his half or something, if that's, you know, a gentleman's agreement, that's what you wanted to do. But, you know, it would raise your tax bracket, because, you know, instead of having at the end of the year, you've got $50,000 in retained earnings. You know, it's just split in half. You're going to take 25, and he's going to take 25. You know, that's what you're responsible to pay tax on. If you did it the other way, and it's all yours, you're responsible to pay tax on that entire $50,000, which is going to put you in a higher tax bracket as well. So you have to run the numbers on this. More than likely, you know, from a saving standpoint, bringing him on is the way to go. But if he comes on and then, you know, ruins the company, then you haven't saved anything. So that's where, you know, it might be wise to just keep him as an employee. If that's, it depends on your personal situation on that one. So I think you really need to think hard on that. It sounds like you are considering different options, and I'm assuming because he's family, that's where it's at. So keeping him as an employee, you know, as a W-2 employee is probably the way to go if that's your level of trust in him. So that comes on you. I can't help you with that.
No, that's not the issue. The issue is to stay compliant with the law and stay legal, but trying to pay the least amount of dollars. That's what everybody likes, you know, and everybody wants to do. So I understand, you know, because, I mean, at $196,000, I get charged, like, what's now, 22% or 15%? Or that, I'm looking about, like 20-some, like, $30,000 a year out of $196,000, right?
Right.
What they're charging now us, right?
Well, it depends on how much your earnings are at the end of the year. So, that varies. And that's why I'm saying bringing him on, he shares in that with you, and then you slice your retained earnings in half with him, and so that lowers your tax bracket that much more. So that's what you have to look at. So, because he shares in all of the expenses, he shares in all of the everything. 50-50 on, you know, I'm using 50-50, it's an easy number, but, you know, 75, 25, whatever portion you bring him in on. Mm-hmm. But he shares in that ratio of everything the business does, including the expenses and including the, you know, the earnings and also including the taxes. So bringing him on as an LLC, to make him a member of the LLC is probably the way to go for tax advantages. But there may be other issues that you have to look at. So that's something you need to run by your accountant and check and see. But I don't see how it could be better to dissolve the LLC and turn it into a partnership. That's almost a certain no on that. But to answer your other question about buying a new truck, never buy something just to save money on taxes, just to write it off. Do you need a new truck?
Not really, because my truck just had a remanufactured Detroit engine put on about a year ago, and it's barely had 100,000. And I still got a warranty on it.
Okay. I wouldn't buy a truck just for the write-off. That doesn't make any sense because for every dollar you spend on that truck, say you have $1,000 a month payment, so $12,000 a year. You spent $12,000, okay? You only get to save, you know, whatever your tax bracket is, you only get to save about 30%. So for every dollar you spend, you save 30 cents. But you had to spend a dollar to get it. So if you would like to, if you just want to write something off, you can give me $100,000, and I'll pay the tax for you.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? Do you see the logic there?
Yeah, I know. Why would I do that?
Right. If you don't need the truck, don't buy the truck. Pay the tax. But if you need the truck anyway, if you want to...
I do need the trailer.
Okay. If you need a trailer and the trailer is going to generate you more money, then absolutely buy a trailer. You know, you can't go wrong buying equipment, but if you don't need it, don't buy it. If you already have one, don't buy it. I mean, if you're buying it just solely for a tax write-off, it doesn't make sense. But if you need the equipment, buy the equipment and take the write-off.
Yeah, well, the reason why I was saying is because basically you're trying to save a little bit on fuel and, you know, in the maintenance, work and free maintenance. You know what I mean? Like, I would not have to do the maintenance myself.
Okay.
It would just be budgeted into the equation, and if something goes wrong, all I got to do it at Kenworth and say, well, it's wrong. I need another one.
Okay, now that does make sense. You know, I asked you if you need a new truck. You said you had a rebuilt engine in it, and so I'm assuming that your cost and you know fuel mileage, everything is in good shape with the truck you have. If for some reason your maintenance cost is extremely high, or you know for your truck you've already rebuilt the engine, you're still only getting 4 miles to the gallon or something crazy like that, then you should consider upgrading. But don't do it only for the purpose of saving money on taxes, just for the tax write-off. If the other numbers make sense, if you can save money on maintenance and you save money on downtime and things like that, then that can factor into the equation. But don't do it just for the tax write-off.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Kenny. And I know what I'm going to do. So I'm just out because I was actually going to count in tomorrow and, you know, and work things with the lady. So I'm just going to bring him as a partnership. And he's got to come out with, you know, with his amount of to the company because, you know, he wants to come along. He's got to give me the money that I pay for the authority and for the trailer. So he wants to be a 50-50 partnership because now that I heard what I will not do it any other way. I mean, I would not put the same effort of that he would into the company and pay more tax. I just don't see myself doing that. That's stupid.
So run it all by your accountant, and it all comes down to the numbers, really. So I appreciate the call, and I think you're on the right track with that now. So we'll jump to another phone call. And remember, our overall theme tonight is your first impressions and the image and the appearance that you're putting out there. I've got another call here, Donna in Utah. Donna, it's been a while. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kenny. How are you tonight?
Fantastic. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Yeah, you know, just along the lines of your topic tonight, in the last couple of months, I've actually been in or had opportunities to meet a couple of the brokers that I've either worked with or been trying to work with. One of them happened to be in Vegas, and I had been talking to them. They do a lot of trade show moves. And so I had been trying to kind of get in with them, but my trailer is not very logistically friendly. So I've been making some improvements. But I've been talking to this guy. So he had invited me. He said, "Well, you know, next time through town, why don't you stop in and say hi? You know, introduce yourself." So I did that. I mean, I, you know, made sure, you know, stopped, showered, got all cleaned up, made sure my truck looked good and everything, and stopped in and met him. He walked me all through their facility, told me everything about what they do. And in fact, today, I'm hauling my first load for them. Now, not to say that I couldn't have, but it's like once you meet people, you have a different type of a connection with them. You have a better relationship and you trust each other more. You know, something that he did, because we still talk quite a bit, is I'm just bringing a partial down to Vegas, and I was going to deadhead to Southern California because I've got a load tomorrow. But he was able to arrange when I drop in Vegas, reload at the same dock going down to Southern California, and he already knows what I'm expecting. You know, so he negotiated the rate and everything, and it was fine with me because he knew I was going to deadhead home. You know, it's just that kind of a thing. I've got another one in Oregon that I've done quite a few loads with, and I got into town, and part of the load had shifted and fallen. So I, you know, had offered to kind of reach Dax, and he goes, "You know what? I'll drop by and I'll help you." And so he and I restacked a load in Portland. I have a great relationship now with that particular broker because he's met me. He knows I'm a hard worker. And now when he's got loads available, he'll present them to me before he posts them or even sends out emails. So definitely, I think that, you know, you talk about your brand, you know, meeting people, letting them know how hard you're willing, you know, what you're willing to do so that they know what to expect of you. I mean, I think it's really one of the best things that people can do for their business. Anytime you have an opportunity to meet one of your brokers, I recommend it. And, you know, just present yourself well. That's about it.
It changes the entire dynamic when you talk to them now, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, now you're buddies, you know. The broker up in Oregon, I mean, we have some fantastic conversations talking about, you know, gaining, you know, getting more business, you know, and you know, him finding some customers, or if I've talked, you know, different things like that that are up there, you know, things that I can't service by myself, you know. I mean, it's amazing. It's really cool, you know, to have these types of relationships. I mean, I can't tell you how much it's changed, I still run Spot Market. I use load boards. But now I have, you know, some people that I can check with first. In fact, the guy that I'm on this load now, I already know where I'm going to finish up next Monday. He's already told me. I'll look and I'll see if I can find you something out of there. And the other one up in Oregon, when I have finished up his loads, he's actually gotten on load boards and looked for loads for me out of areas. So, you know, whether I asked him to or needed him to, which I didn't, he did it. He just jumped in there and did it. So, you know, I remember time last year. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's a lot to be said for this relationship building. I know a lot of us are, you know, we preach this all the time, and there are, until you've done it, it's easy to be skeptical, but especially with brokers, you know, it's one thing to go after direct customers, which, you know, there's a lot of talk of that, but building a relationship with brokers, there's a huge benefit to that. And when you get to know one of a broker you can work with personally that knows what you want before you even call them, it makes life so much easier. And there's nothing wrong with working with brokers, but having a relationship with them, it ensures, you know, much easier negotiations, better rates. You know, like you said, you plan on deadheading back and he found you a load to go back. I mean, it just all around, building relationships it's almost a necessity, especially now that freight has slowed down a little bit, as it has. Having solid relationships and people to call that you can rely on, that's, I think, in a lot of cases, the difference between people that will thrive in this type of environment versus people that are just going to get by or maybe even go out of business.
Right, yeah, I agree with that. So that's all. I just wanted to share that. I'll let a few other people get on. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you, Donna, and it was good to hear from you again. It has been a while. Elizabeth sent me a note here. But going back to, you know, the overall topic here, I just wanted to run down, and we do have some other callers on. Let's see. All right, I'll get to this in a minute. But I just had a few notes I wanted to go over here. But things to think about when you're now the company owner. Of course, we've all seen the pictures and heard the stories about the, you know, slob walking across the truck stop wearing a tracksuit and sandals and hasn't taken a shower in a month and never brushed the hair or teeth or anything. That's the driver image. And if you own the company, is that the image that you want to present under your brand? Hopefully it's not you. If it is, do you recognize that it is? And what can you do about it? So, again, the image and the appearance of the small things like the driver or the truck or little things like that are all just a subcategory under marketing. You know, you've got marketing, which is, you know, building the brand and all that, but the appearance that these little things bring is what can make a difference. It's what can set you apart from the rest of the crowd. Now, with drivers, if you have employees that, or even if you yourself find that you have an issue with this, and I know solo drivers or, you know, owner-operators or one-truck carriers drive the truck themselves that understand and recognize that they themselves have a problem with their own appearance at times. What do they do about it? I know personally friends with a few guys that had to go out because they recognized this, you know, fault of their own, recognized this and went out and bought, you know, a few dozen polo shirts, matching slacks, made that their uniform, wear that every single day. So every day they know what they're wearing, they look presentable and nice, they make it a point to take showers and get cleaned up, well-shaven, hair brushed and, you know, not well-groomed, all that type of stuff. And that makes a difference. That makes a huge difference. Now, with Donna, she showed up there smelling like she just rolled out of her bed after 4 days of not showering, wearing sweatpants and flip-flops, and walked in to meet this new customer of hers. How would that have turned out? Because she probably wouldn't have called to tell me that story just now if that's how it worked out. She made it a point to tell me that she stopped and got cleaned up, showered, made sure her truck was in good shape before going in there. What if she didn't? So that's that alone, just the image of the driver alone is huge. Now, if you're the driver, you can do that yourself. What about if you have employee drivers or owner-operators under you? Well, maybe uniforms for the entire fleet. Or how about a dress code? For example, whenever you're in the truck or, you know, on duty per se, you have to wear work boots or, you know, closed-toed shoes at least. And another thing, of course, Kevin Rutherford is on his health kick right now. And the health of drivers out here is huge. There's obviously a huge stereotype. No pun intended on the huge stereotype. But the health of drivers, either yourself or your employees, how can that change? Can you inspire your drivers to lead a healthier lifestyle? So another part, you know, just with drivers, how about the truck itself? I don't have any problem with running older equipment. I think everybody should. How do you maintain it? How do you keep it clean, maintained? Does it look like, as Dale Howard would say, a wounded gazelle? So, got another caller here that we'll bring on. I know he's talked about this before. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good evening. How you doing?
Fantastic. What have you got to add? I know we've talked about this before, and you've got a lot to add. So,
well, I can add about health and also the image topic that we're discussing tonight. I mean, as far as the image goes, your points that you're making are very straight on. I mean, the whole thing about it is, you know, you basically, if you're an independent owner-operator, you're basically selling yourself. In my case, I'm a company driver. You know, I work for a large carrier that's actually very well respected out here. But at the same time, we're respected because of the fact that we do try to maintain a professional image. So it's one of those things where, you know, whenever I go into a customer, you know, if I or any of our drivers go into a customer, if they're well-dressed and well-groomed, interject like five profane words in every sentence and they can disrupt whenever they talk, they're going to get a lot more respect. Chances are they're going to be able to get in and out the door a lot faster as far as getting their loads and everything else or getting their deliveries done. I mean, it just makes everything a lot better, especially when it comes to how we're treated. I mean, I've had customers invite me to lunch and stuff like that for special occasions. And, like if they were going to take a lunch break, they invite me to jump in their car to go with them somewhere to go eat, you know, if they're all going to go out and eat on a Friday or whatever. And as far as the health aspect goes, I just want to kind of round this up pretty quickly and everything for you. There's a lot of things to gain personally from being healthy out here. When you really think about it long term, do you want to retire in a time of your own choosing or when circumstances force you to retire out of the truck? And also, when you do retire, do you want to live the kind of life that you dreamed about, like maybe be out on the beach with the grandchildren and the families and whatnot, or do you want to just spend the last days in a nursing home? I mean, the choice is yours. The decisions you make now will affect everything down the road. I mean, I'm not expecting everybody to go out and be a new athlete like I am or anything like that, but I mean, at the same time, if we all try a little bit harder in terms of image and in health, I think we can accomplish a lot out here, not only in our work life, but our personal life. I think it would do a lot for everybody. I really do.
Well, absolutely. You know, and as a company owner, if you have employees under you, you know, to inspire them to be healthy, you know, and some of the things you might be able to do is, you know, give some incentives, maybe include a nationwide gym membership as part of their pay, or maybe some type of a Biggest Loser type of a program for your drivers.
Exactly.
How about if they're smokers? Smoking is huge. You know, in this day and age, and of course, you know, truck driving is one of those where you sit there all day. I understand smokers smoke most often when they're driving, but if you show up at your shipper, receiver, customer, and they're not a smoker, and you walk in and you smell like a chimney, that is the impression that you've just given your customer. And some folks, that's huge. And nothing against it if you're a smoker, but, you know, if you have company drivers that are smokers, maybe you can incentivize them to quit. So, and overall, you mentioned looking at after they retire, but what about during their time at home, you know, their weekends at home or time off? Are they happy then? Do they get to spend time with their friends and family then? Do they get to get out of the house, or are they, you know, their health holding them back to where they're not willing to leave the house? And let's face it, in this industry, there's a lot of that. So, and also, you know, just with image-wise, are your drivers well-informed of what's happening and how the business is doing? And are they educated? And can they communicate well with your customers on what they need to do to make sure the loads move efficiently and properly? Are they trained to do that? All of these things, as a company owner, are things that you can do to eliminate issues. The other thing is, how are they dispatched? Are they happy with the way they're dispatched? Do they have any choices? Do they have any control over it? Company drivers may be force dispatched, but if you can give them some options, or if you can give them a little bit of control over their own lives, most drivers come out here to have freedom and be out away from people and do their own thing, run their own little business. But can you give them a little bit of control over their lives? That would improve their life and their happiness in most cases greatly, and that alone will help improve their, you know, physical and spiritual and mental health out here on the road as well. All of that will show when they meet your customers. The other aspect, are you still with me, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just letting you talk. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'll just leave you on. But, yeah, the other thing is, you know, look at your business model, your business plan long term. And form your plan to reflect an image to your customers of their long-term goal. If your goal is to focus completely on direct customers and to run dedicated lanes on a dedicated basis, maybe having owner-operators isn't for you. Maybe having a company, you know, W-2 employee driver is the way to go, because you could put them on that and they'd be happy doing that. If you put an owner-operator on that, would they be happy being basically forced dispatched if they don't have any options? Can you please your customers with that business model? If you have a fleet of owner-operators working under you, and every day a different driver comes in the door, will your customers appreciate that, or would they like to see John in Truck 101 every single day? Every single time this load goes, do they want to see...
Very good point, because, I mean, you build relationships, that usually means you're going to have people that that know each other and they work together. Very good point.
Absolutely. Now, building relationships not with just the customers on your level, but let your drivers and your employees interact with your customers as well. So all of these things can reflect on your image of how your customers can see you. And all of that is a reflection of you personally. So
exactly.
The question becomes, you know, do you want to set yourself apart? Do you want to excel and become a leader in this business? Do you want other companies to look at you and try to emulate what you're doing? Because you're the top 1%. And when that happens, customers come to you. You don't have to do any marketing anymore. You don't have to do any sales anymore. They come to you. That's really what the goal is. So ultimately, what do you accomplish with that? You're happy. You're making plenty of money. Your employees are happy. They're making money. They're healthy. Your customers are happy. Just all around, it's a good environment. And all of it comes back to just the little things of image and appearance. You know, it's customer service at the most minute detail of, you know, the little things that matter. So that's what I really would like everybody to take away from the show tonight. That's the focus that we should all try to have when we're out here. And instead of trying to, as I said from the beginning of the show, and I have it in big print on top of my page here, instead of trying to complain about the problems and talk about the overweight, slob and sweatpants walking across the truck stop in flip-flops, I've heard that story more times than I can count. Instead of just complaining about the problem, why don't we all start working on solutions?
There you go, be a part of the solution. That's a very good motto.
Absolutely, and you can't change what everyone else does, but you can change what you do with yourself and your own organization, your own business. And once we all change ourselves for the better, we effectively have changed the entire industry. But we all have to take responsibility for ourselves to do it. So,
yeah, we got to quit playing victim and try to actually make things happen. By presenting ourselves as a professional manager out here.
That's right, and there's a lot of victim mentality out here, and a lot of truck stop lawyers and accountants and, you know, fitness gurus, but at the end of the day, none of that matters if you don't take ownership of your own problems and come with your own solutions. And we're all here to help each other, but you have to start at home. You have to start with yourself. And focusing on your own business and marketing your business, this should be a key element. Because you can have all of the flyers in the world, you can have all of your trucks well labeled, and you can have logos and advertisements, but if the person on the other side of the phone answers the telephone and just with a hello and can't even speak proper English, you may have just lost your customer. Or if your driver shows up and hasn't had a shower in a month, you may have just lost a customer. And I'm being a little bit harsh here, and I'm aware of that, but I'm trying to make a point. And so I encourage everyone to look outside of yourselves. And I've said this the past couple of shows. If there was an outsider looking at your operation, and I've been guilty of this myself, I can tell everybody what to do. I'm good at it. That's why they gave me a radio show. I can tell people what to do. But sometimes I have to put myself in someone else's shoes to look at what I'm doing. How is my operation going? What would I do if I was somebody else? And that can make a huge difference because you have to realize where you're at to be able to make changes. I think we're losing you, Jeff. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I was just letting you talk, man. But the whole thing, to add to what you're saying, we got to quit, like I said earlier, we need to quit playing the role of victim out here. And think about what we can do on an individual basis to make things happen. I mean, there's a lot of sympathizers out there, especially in the world of trucking media, that will pretty much trying to coddle the people that are complaining about the circumstances of what's her basically self-induced problem. But it's up to each of us on an individual basis to do what we can to make things better. I mean, we can't expect anybody to do it for us. We are living our own lives. We have to make things happen.
Absolutely. And with that, I do have one more call. We'll try to jump to real quick here. And, Jeff, I'll just leave you on the air if you want to add anything with this.
Sure, why not?
Here we go. Bob in Florida, welcome to the show.
Yes, Kenny. You know, you're talking about as far as these drivers and what we need to do and how we need to change things. You know, it's the same old thing over and over and over again. And, you know, everything you said, it all makes sense and what have you. But I think for a lot of these drivers, it's too late. They missed the boat when they were being raised, the mother and father. I mean, you know, I just left the Loves there in Ormond Beach. And, you know, that place is always a zoo in there. But, you know, here you got the guy sitting in front of me. I thought he was inside paying for his fuel. And I'm sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. And he's sitting in his truck there at the fuel island, not doing anything, just sitting there. And the place is all backed up, right? So I have to go up there and ask him to move. He moves. I get my fuel. I go in and pay. I come back out. And he's gone. He went in the bathroom. And then he went into Arby's to get something to eat. I just left his truck sitting there. And then you go in these bathrooms here inside the truck stop. And the drivers are too lazy to lift the seat. They're too lazy to flush it when they get through. I mean, how can you help somebody like that? You can talk till you're blue in the face. They missed it when they were kids growing up. I guess if the parents didn't teach them, somebody should have taught them when they were in school.
Well, I completely agree. But fact of life is we can't change what other people do. We can change our own world, though.
Right. I mean, and then I'm walking, when I was walking into pay, with all the trucks lined up there, it was an older driver like myself. He was at the very closest island to the where you go into pay. And he didn't even buy a pony head. He just walked into pay. Then I said something to him. He totally ignored me. I says, real considerate not to pull ahead for the other drivers. He didn't care. Just left his truck sitting there. I mean, you know, the image, if there was a shipper, a broker, whatever, there at the truck stop, and they seen all this, I mean, which I'm sure they do, it just amazes me. It really does. I've been out here for 30 years, and I don't see where anything's really changing as far as the way these, I don't know if they're owner-operators, company drivers, or who they are, but, you know, I've seen it all.
Well, a lot could change for the better if we actually put forth the effort ourselves to maybe fuel a new trend in the industry towards professionalism and being more considerate about the drivers. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I had to cut him loose. We are down to the last minute here. I just want to add that, as I said before, we can't change what everyone else does, but we can change our own world, our own organization, our own business. And to try to encourage our employees not to be that guy is a start. So when everyone listening to this program right now, when we're out there or our drivers, our fleet are out there, they are not that guy. And the question is, how can you make that happen for yourself? So with that, we're going to wrap things up tonight. I am going to cut it off right at an hour. I will tell you all, Rico Muhammad is on tomorrow night at 7 p.m. with Rates and Lanes. Call his show at 347-677-1799. And if you're listening to the recording, you can catch me Tuesday nights here on Trucking with Authority at 646-668-2277. I love to get as many calls and questions answered as I can. and I appreciate all of your calls and input tonight. You all are what makes this show happen, so thank you all for your support. So until next week, I hope you all are profitable. Hash, put out a great image to the industry, and we will see you then. Have a good night, everyone.